You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Kevin Umanya. Kevin, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin, we're talking about your show, of course, at Yancey Richardson Gallery, and we're going to talk about your work in Sanguine and Spiraling, the title of the show. Before we jump into exactly what's happening in here, the materials you're using and the imagery, I know that part of this is from your early years, right, going between L.A. and El Salvador. Is that correct?
Inspiration comes from those memories and those locations. A lot of the works involved in the show have been created in the past, like 2 or 3 years, and they were all made in New York, but it was a lot of introspection, a lot of digging into certain themes of Los Angeles and El Salvador, but also my life in New York. So a lot of the themes and a lot of motifs come from, like, my memories from L.A. and El Salvador, but all intermixed with how I'm feeling in the state of mind.
So tell me a little bit about the trips to El Salvador. What are some of the memories there that comes in? Because, you know, I feel like I talk about this a lot, artists' early memories and how they're impacting work and how those memories get kind of revised and put into a new context. Can you tell me directly about some of those early El Salvador memories and why they're so important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I've always had issues with remembering things at the way it happened. So a lot of the times it's memories on base how I perceive things. And so for me to have certain memories about my upbringing in El Salvador and L.A., they would have to be quite impactful and important enough for me to remember it. So what I do is often I would, like, remember it and try to dissect it and try to see if any flashes of memory would show up. And so I would also question, like, why am I able to remember these aspects of my life? Like, why did my consciousness think it was important enough for me to remember? But a lot of it stems, a lot of the memories come from my connection with nature in the land. Both sides of my family are dairy farmers. And so I would, you know, walk the farms and, like, the land, the rocky terrain, and then, you know, after my parents decided that, you know, they left because of the Salvador Civil War, and then once they, you know, I was born in Los Angeles, but took me back the first 5 years to try to see if they wanted to bring me up in the States or they wanted to bring me up in El Salvador, and they decided to bring me up in the States because of, you know, certain access to the system and everything. But so there's this weird connections with nature and my forced assimilation to American life. And so I often conflict with that. I always say that I'm living in between two worlds where, like, I'm not really accepted in America because of my background and the color of my skin, but I'm not really, I wouldn't say completely accepted in El Salvador because I was brought up in the States. So it's like this weird dilemma I'm in. And I feel like a lot of people who are first generation often feel this kind of displacement.
Right. You mean neither here or there, kind of?
Yeah, just living in between worlds.
So let's talk about this imagery. In Between Worlds seems like a very apt way to talk about some of this. Revisiting the Roman walls. I mean, to talk about this work is, of course, to talk about the process, among other things, because something so unusual is happening. So for listeners, of course, you can look at images here, but you have to visit this show. This is the kind of work that has to be seen, right? It's sculptural, it's tactile. There's so much happening with the surface. So let's jump into revisiting the Roman walls, which is kind of an interesting title in itself, but also, is a canvas, but there's all kinds of stuff on here, right? Ceramic and ink and acrylic and oil. Let's talk about just building this one first. How does revisiting the Roman walls get built with all of these layers?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely the pictures don't do it the words justice because so much materiality is involved and the colors are so, it takes me days to figure out colors and even to mix certain colors, and colors get changed over time because they don't, they tend to not correlate with each other. And I photograph my own works because photographing ceramics can be troublesome for certain photographers, and so I kind of do it my way where but even then I'm not even a great photographer, so even the colors on the screen aren't the best. But my works are ceramics and paintings on canvas, and so the image of the work turned this is me revisiting a painting I did back in 2023 about the Roman walls, parts of the Roman walls in, I believe, Verona that I went to go see for the first time in 2021. And so I was just kind of like amazed to see this freestanding wall that was built thousands of years ago, and looking at how time has worn down these rocks and these bricks that the Romans had built out, and each brick looked looked like a modern painting in itself. It kind of looked like a Mondrian, where it's like stacked, discolored bricks, and there's so much history within those aspects. And so, like, I always imagine that there's like, some loose bricks that people would hide treasures in, or sometimes people would mix some bone ash, so like skeletons of people into bricks, and so this aspect of so this painting is revisiting a painting I made about the Roman wall. So there's like this sort of play on words, so it's the ceramics come first. Like people always ask me what comes first. It's the drawing comes first, and then the ceramics get glazed, and then the how the glazes and the colors come out inform what techniques and what the color orientation of the painting is going to be. So it's a lot of back and forth. It's a dance between me and the kiln. And a lot oftentimes the glazes that I the colors that I think are going to come out don't really come out the way it comes out because of the clay body or certain accidents or even the firings. So it's a lot of spontaneous reactions I have to do with the glazes. And
And
then
is
I try
the glaze the oil and the paint the acrylic?
the glazes are the binder, the glass. It's the chemicals that are on the ceramic that gives it color and that gives it this protective film on ceramics. And so when I refer to glazes, I mean the colors on the ceramic portions of the painting. And so I try to teach myself how to get those effects in acrylic and oil. So I'm often implementing certain ingredients such as marble dust or salt or resin or watercolor or inks to try to get those finishes that the glazes are able to do. Because if you really get up close to them, there's this sort of depth, and there's each section of the glazes kind of look like their own galaxies, because there's so much depth, so much texture, so much chemicals that go into the ingredients of glazes. So I'm trying to, reverse engineer the how the ingredients were able to do that in the fired process. So I'm often teaching myself different new techniques and different approaches to paintings to try to imitate those glaze effects.
So interesting. And so the work itself, revisiting the Roman walls, you mentioned that a little bit. I mean, of course, that's a memory that's neither New York or El Salvador, but it's about a specific place and time that it sounds like you have an attachment to, because there's another one about aqueducts, but we'll talk about that in a minute, right? So just talking about the Roman walls themselves and revisiting the Roman walls, that also sounds like a cherished memory, or is it something else?
Yeah, I would say a cherished memory. There, I would often say that a lot of my paintings will be equivalent to a journal entry. It would be like a timestamp in certain impressions I get from life. So something that is memorable, something that catches my eye, or something that is a coincidence, I try to investigate why it caught my eye and why it's important for me. And so I'm trying to like decipher just kind of like express that to the world. And a lot of the paintings are ever evolving, because it might be something that inspired me today. It might be a memory that I am revisiting, or there is something that I have to connect with some way. I need to find a sort of like passion, or it's hard to explain, but they're often just like journal entries.
There's such different imagery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that aren't necessarily specific to a time or place or a memory. I mean, so other ones like the clothesline appearing as aqueducts. I mean, that's a combination of things. Also, kind of drawn from a journal entry, or is something else happening there? Also Roman as a metaphor, it seems, almost.
Yeah, I mean, that was made around the same time my trip to Italy. And it was this, my background, how I got into art is through architecture. So I had to study a lot of Western architecture, but also architecture of Islam and architecture of Latin America. But there's something about the aqueducts and this aspect of this engineering that is still standing and what's so pivotal for the life of a urban setting. It was like I often try to find patterns in life, and so there was one time I was walking, I believe maybe like Venice or Verona, and there's clotheslines hanging in between alleys or streets, and people have their laundry hanging and drying, and there's this correlation that I had. This is funny because this kind of looks like aqueducts, and this is such a imagery that I had to like jot down, and I was like, oh, maybe I can make a painting that are about aqueducts, but also the various colors are coming from the various clothing that I saw on the clothing line. And so a lot of the times the titles indicate what is referencing, but I often leave it open-ended so like the viewer can either think, oh, it's about aqueducts, or it's about clothes, or it's something completely different that, so like the titles are a bit vague enough to be open-ended.
Yeah, so fascinating about that. So the last one is, that we're discussing today, before we get to the end of our interview, is Sanguine and Spiraling, the namesake of the show. Is that because this has a particular meaning for you, this Sanguine and Spiraling, the namesake of the show, and also the work of art?
Yeah, the Sanguine and Spiraling comes from this idea and symbolism about spirals and how spirals have been used throughout the history of like humans, and the symbol has been popping up here and there, and how over time the theme of a spiral has represented like profound journeys of personal growth or cyclical nature of life, and and then the word sanguine, I read it in a book and I was like, whoa, this is I had to look up what the word sanguine was. I was like, this is such a weird word, I don't know what this is. And so and then to learn that it meant like lively and optimistic and related to blood, I had these two words in my notebooks, and I was like, oh, sanguine and spiraling, this sort of like remaining optimistic while at that moment my life was spiraling, in the sense that I was going through a lot of personal growth, a lot of like self-introspection, but I still had to remain optimistic that I had to go through this like downward spiral in order to reach the other end. So it has this more psychological and it has more of a psychological meaning than an actual depiction of observation. So it's more introspective than depicting something in real life.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's such a beautiful show. I want to encourage any of the listeners to go down and see it, because as you said, this is of course something you have to see in person. There's a tactile and sculptural quality to this that just doesn't read in images. You have to go see it. So I want to encourage everybody to go see it. And I want to ask you one more question before we go. What are you reading at the moment?
At the moment, I'm reading, I'm reading three books at a time. At home, I'm reading The Slip, which is, I forget the author. It's, I think, it's about the slip in New York where Agnes Martin and Elsa Kelly and Robert Indiana used to live. And then at the studio, I'm reading Yellowface by, what's her name? Yellowface. RK something, or RFK Kwong. And then at home, I'm also reading Tao and Psychology by Jean Shimoda Olin. So I'm like reading three books at a time.
Well, thanks. Yeah, all those sound fascinating, some of which I know. I want to, again, tell the listeners there's links here to follow through and learn more. And I want to thank you so much, Kevin, for talking with me today. I appreciate your beautiful show and your time with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I appreciate the time to talk about my show.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.